Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. That's a little bit of Van Halen bringing us back. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be back.
Well, I'm glad you're here, but folks, Joan has brought me some sad news. As you know, folks, I love going to Washington, D.C. I love the city. It's a wonderful city. It's a beautiful city.
Probably, you love it when you come. You spend lots of money.
Exactly. It is my opinion, the most beautiful big city in America, I think.
Can't argue with that.
I really do think it is. And it'd be more beautiful if we could get the barricades down.
What's the old saying? It's got northern charm and southern efficiency.
Exactly. I think it's the other way around.
But, well, anyway, it didn't used to be.
Northern charm? What's kind of an oxymoron is that?
It used to have northern charm and southern efficiency, but I think they've fixed it.
Anyway, there's an institution. We've lost so many institutions in the last year or so.
Yes.
We lost Bear Stearns. We lost Lehman. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac were nationalized. AIG was nationalized. All these institutions we've basically lost. And now you're telling me Nathan's.
That's right. A mainstay of Georgetown.
A landmark, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. I started going there 25 years ago, and it was already a landmark then.
Right.
And, I mean, there were already pictures on the wall that had been there forever and ever. Right at the corner of Emin, Wisconsin, folks, this wonderful restaurant called Nathan's. And by the way, if you ever wanted to see me there, table 43, that's my table. And, I mean, when I'd go there, Joan, I'd make reservations 2 weeks in advance.
Yeah, well, you had to back
then. For table 43. I did it in May. I was there in May.
Right.
And I did it. The best Eggs Benedict on Saturday morning that you've ever had in your life. And now it's going out. You're telling me that this weekend's the last weekend because of a couple of things. And I just feel like we need to do some kind of little Nathan's tribute or something, Joe.
Yeah, well, I think you have to give the owner a lot of credit for soldiering on the way she did.
She lost her husband about
12 years ago and did a valiant effort of keeping Nathan's going and just it can't do it anymore.
Well, there are a couple of issues. I think the economy was the death knell.
Right.
I think the slow economy there, and believe it or not, with all the...
It was the thing that put it over the edge, but it wasn't the only thing.
Right. There were a couple of other issues. But, I mean, they had the it was a newsmaker thing there. What was that thing called that they did where they brought in newsmakers and did open forums and things like that? I've forgotten the term.
Right. I don't remember what they called it.
But you know what I'm talking about. This is a big deal, folks. Anyway...
It leads to anybody who knows Georgetown. Years ago, Georgetown was little independent shops and restaurants, and now, of course, it's the usual chain and big block store.
Yeah, I'm worried about what's going to happen. And first, I lost Bamiyan's, my Afghan restaurant downtown there in Georgetown, and now this one. So anyway, folks, nothing lasts forever. Things change.
So you're going to be depressed this morning?
I'm already depressed. I'm not going to be. I'm already depressed.
Yeah.
So, but life grows on, and I'll be fine, Joan. Don't worry about me.
I hope so.
Joan, but here's more depressing news.
What?
That Kiplinger brought.
Oh.
About the regulations. Joan, do you know that small business owners already spend more than double per employee complying with regulations than big businesses do? Did you know that?
Wow. That's terrible.
It's over $7,000. It may be $8,000 by now per employee per year to comply with all the regulations that the governments lay on top of, and because we have such a concentrated workforce, and per dollar of sales, it's more than double what major corporations pay, even though they have all their extra regulations. And now you're saying that we may have more. What's going on here?
Well, just to put a finer point on it, and now the focus, we're talking about a financial regulatory overhaul.
Yeah.
And you can imagine why that there's this reaction among policymakers to a lot of the excesses and problems in the financial marketplace. But what it means is, what it's going to mean is more regulation probably by early next year.
Yeah.
But and what's interesting is we say financial industry officials are resigned and even supportive of some moves.
Well, Joan, some of these things that you guys identify here, I think probably need to be done. Mm-hmm. But whenever I hear more regulations, Joan, it's either direct extra work for small businesses or it's direct extra costs
right.
for small business. Because when you put regulatory new regulations on top of financial institutions, when small business owners consume those financial products, they have to pay for that.
That's right.
Or they have to jump through hoops to get that. For example, if banks now, if following this regulation, these regulation implementations, if banks require more information from small business owners in order to comply, and they very well may, as we're going to talk in a minute, that's going to be more work for small businesses.
Right.
And we're not the ones who created the problem, Joan.
That's true.
We're not the problem. And there's one other thing, Joan, I want to point out here. Folks, this is closing the door after the horse is out of the barn. Right, Joan?
I mean, this after is, the horse has been stolen, right?
This is a reaction. This
yeah.
is a reaction to the what's happened.
Right.
That should have already been taken care of. Everything that happened, not maybe not everything, but most of the things that have happened to cause us these problems, there were rules against a lot of those things that just weren't enforced. And see, that's what happened. We have an example of the government reacting this way in the past. About 6 years ago, they passed something called Sarbanes-Oxley.
Yes.
Which was a reaction to Enron, WorldCom, Tyco, et cetera, et cetera. Even though those guys broke laws that were on the books and were then prosecuted by those laws, they passed Sarbanes-Oxley, the horse out of the barn. They closed the barn door with Sarbanes-Oxley. And all that did was add regulation on top of regulation. It did not solve anything. And Joan, guess what? It didn't prevent what happened in 08 and 07 and 08.
Well, I think it was a different situation, though.
Well, but, you know, if... But the thing is, Joan, is that they passed Sarbanes-Oxley,
right.
which basically really contributed nothing of value to the market. I mean, nobody... I don't know anybody who knows about Sarbanes-Oxley who says that it's been valuable, it's helped. And yet... they're getting ready to do something similar to that with these new regulations. I just don't have any confidence. Their track record is not good, Joan.
Okay.
The government's track record. That's my point, folks. And we've got the examples to back it up. Quick break, 20 after. We're going to come back. There are some things, though, that need to be done. But there's one that bothers me a lot. It's the Consumer Protection Watchdog regulation that I'm worried about. 20 after. Right back with Joan. Stay with us.
Blowing my money all over. I wouldn't be doggone. Hey, hey, I belong.
Little Chicago bringing us back. 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. My website, I hope you'll check it out, is at smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you very much for taking advantage of all the things that we have there and using it to your advantage. We've got thousands of interviews that I've done with lots and lots of smart people over the years. The topics that are there, many, many of them are as relevant today as they were a year or whenever we did ago or whenever we did them. There are so many things there, so many classic conversations. And then, of course, we've got thousands of articles of past interviews. I mean, articles that my Brain Trust members have written or that I've written. My knowledge base is there. You can ask questions, get answers. You can subscribe to my newsletter. We'll send it to you on Sunday afternoon by email. You can check out my blog, which we update on a regular basis. And lots of other things there. Just use it to your advantage, smallbusinessadvocate.com. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter if you want, at Jim Blassingame. Joan Pride is our guest. She's with the Kiplinger Editors, as I said. Joan, you're all over Twitter, aren't you?
Well, I don't even know what that is. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's so. I thought that might be the case. I just thought I'd have a little fun with you.
I can barely handle Facebook. I can't.
You
go
have. You're on
Facebook.
You're on Facebook.
I was dragged kicking and screaming.
I believe it. You're not happy there either, are you?
Oh gosh, no.
And so, folks, when you go to her Facebook page, you see the picture with a scowl on her face. You know, a lady with a scowl on her face. You know that you've come to the right place. Hey, Joan, let's talk about, we're still talking about these financial regulations. I hate to bring this up, but this consumer protection watchdog thing, it makes me nervous.
Okay.
You guys report on that. Tell the audience what that is, what that's going to be all about.
Well, the idea is, you know, like you say, a consumer protection watchdog. They're supposed to prevent fraud and abuse in mortgages and credit cards and things like that. And making sure that what they call underserved communities get access to financial services.
Mm. Joan, that's part of what caught us in the problem we got. That's one of the things that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac got into a problem on. But the thing that bothers me, Joan, about this financial services watchdog is they're going to overlay that on top of the banking regulations. This is going to be another regulator on top of the existing banking regulators, which are in charge of making sure that the deposits are taken care of, that the shareholders of the banks are taken care of, that you know that the business side of the banking business is managed. And
well, right. You would think that if the banking regulators themselves were doing their job, they would be the consumer watchdog.
Exactly. You're making my point. And so what I'm concerned about, Joan, is that there will be a conflict for banks between taking care of their depositors and their investors and taking care of their consumers. I believe that these two watchdogs are going to make bankers' lives even more miserable, and consequently services and support for small businesses will be hindered. That's what worries me about this.
Okay.
So we'll see. There's no way to know. I mean, until it happens.
Right.
This is my conjecture. But Joan, there are some things down here that you guys talk about that I think probably needs to have to be done. That's the oversight of the systemic risk sector. Tell us about that.
Well, and this is interesting. If you go back, remember AIG, we talked about the kinds of cascading failures, you know, that if AIG went down, who else was it going to pull down with it?
Because we didn't know who the counterparties were.
Right, exactly.
We didn't know who they were, where all the tentacles were. Go ahead.
Right, and so the idea is to put systems in place that would keep that from becoming an issue.
I don't know enough about that business to know how onerous or how illogical it is. I just know that part of not knowing who the counterparties were was a big part of the fear,
yeah,
and the anxiety and the the government's feeling that they needed to overreact.
Well, in 1 minute they're saying, well, we're not, I think it was at Lehman that they had an opportunity to prop up and decided not to.
Yeah.
And then the next week they're propping up AIG. So if I was the Lehman folks, I would be a little miffed.
I would be too. What about Bear Stearns?
Right, what about Bear Stearns?
Exactly. And so, no, that's exactly right. And so I don't know the answer to that.
We're both treading water here.
I got to say that this systemic risk thing is probably something that needs to be done.
Yeah.
But Joan, I've never been wrong by having a healthy skepticism about the government's ability to do anything.
Yeah.
I've never had that's never been a problem for me. I've always been proven any concerns I ever had about the government's ability to solve a problem have been justified. So just keep what for whatever that's worth, folks. The regulatory floodlight, Joan. You guys point that out down there a little bit. The derivatives. Now you're our derivatives expert, Joan.
Yeah, like I'm the currency expert.
So yeah, right. Exactly. Our derivatives and our currency expert. Tell the audience what a derivative is.
Well, I'm not really sure, but I guess the way I think of it is, it's not the financial instrument itself. It's like it's something that derives its value from the financial instrument one or two steps removed,
yeah.
And in a lot of cases you're hedging And I've never understood hedges only because if I'm hedging my risk, that risk has to be given to somebody else. It can't be given forever so that nobody ends up with it.
And at some point in time, when does it stop adding value to the marketplace?
Right.
That's the challenge with derivatives,
right.
It seems to me. And I think some kind of a floodlight on that is probably a good deal. See, Joan, I'm pretty even-handed about this. Quick break. Stay with me. Joan Pride and I will be right back. More to come.
Oh, I'm bad. Amazing why.
He's business's bad boy.
You're bad, and I like it.
Yep, he's one bad apple.
That's right, we're bad. That's right.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
Well, I'm bad, 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 bad. Amazing why.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. I'm Jim the Bad. Joan the Good is with us. Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, is with us. Joan, how you like that? I'm bad. You're good? You all right with that?
Works for me.
Yeah, I thought it might. Hey, Joan, let's move over and talk about... before we do that, I want to come back to one thing. As we were wrapping up, I want to land on something that I think we all need to think about. And we were talking about derivatives. Mm-hmm. One of the problems we got into, Joan, and I think in my simplistic way of looking at the financial mess that we're in right now, and that some other people have gotten us into, I think this derivatives is one of the key issues, because it seems to me that once you created a security for the sake of creating a security that would drive more commissions, in other words, you didn't add any new value. There was nothing new of value, but it did just, all it did was add leverage, and which is what the extra commissions, when you add commissions and administration on top of something without adding any value, that's adding leverage. And so what we've all got to realize, Joan, is that this economy, in our economy, the future is going to be, and the regulators are going to tell us this, is going to be about how much value have you added to that transaction.
Right, and I'd like to make a distinction. I think that's a good point, and I'd like to make a distinction between what I consider a necessary hedge, which is, let's say, a farmer.
Exactly.
I can understand farmers.
This is not about
hedges.
Right. No, no.
In a sense, insurance is a hedge.
That's
you buy
exactly
insurance
what it is.
Because you need someone to handle the risk, but
no
someone
question.
Is handling the risk.
Right.
If the risk keeps being, you know, repackaged and repackaged and repackaged,
right. Right.
There's something wrong with the system. And that's the more than the extent of my knowledge of derivatives.
No, you are exactly right. And so I think that's what they're going to be focusing on in the regulatory area. And I think that's probably a good thing. I mean, there needs to be some control of that. But the point I'm making here, Joan, is that in the regular marketplace, you know, that's one of the things I think is going to be a very important part of. And of course, we've always done that. Small business owners have been adding value time after time after time. Otherwise, we can't stay in business.
Yeah.
And I think Wall Street needs to take a lesson from Main Street on adding value.
I think they should
take every one of those guys who did that and make them go spend some time in a small business working at minimum wage. How about that?
Sure.
Joan, let's move over and talk about the economy a little bit. Mixed signals from the economy. Talk to us about what you're saying here.
Yeah, I'm afraid so, and I think that this is going to keep happening. We're saying that we're getting positive economic news in terms of manufacturing and housing, but we're still getting an increase in the number of jobs lost in June, and then you've got unemployment hitting 9.5%. Maybe there's something wrong with me, but I'm not sure I completely understand this frenzy over the unemployment rate, because we keep saying that unemployment is a lagging indicator.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I heard somebody talk about that recently, Joan. Mm-hmm. I wish I could say the guy's name, but I heard him say that it is a lagging indicator, but with the combination of unemployment and the credit collapse, that actually is not just a lagging indicator. It actually flips around and it becomes a sustaining indicator.
Ooh.
You see what I mean? I don't think he used the word sustain. That's my word. But my point is, it's not just a lagging indicator as in, okay, we already had that problem. That's behind us. Now we just need to move on. He's saying it's kind of running along with us because the combination of unemployment and the credit collapse, meaning the personal credit collapse, where there's a lack of credit card availability, a lack of home equity loans, a lack of personal credit lines, that combination mm-hmm. is going to exacerbate and keep the unemployment issue more concurrent, more current than just being lagging, so to speak. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Yeah, and anyway, that's what he said, and I think it makes a lot of sense. I think he's right. And so the point is, as long as we have this unemployment as it is with all these other challenges, you know, I think that's the reason why you're seeing the stock market go down. The most recent survey that we got in on small business optimism from the Tatum folks, which we covered earlier this week, that's down. We were having some green arrows pointing up, but now those arrows are pointing sideways and down. So, you know, folks, things are looking a little dicey right now. And I think it's because of what that guy was talking about with regard to employment and credit. Quick break, 22. We come back. We're going to talk about whether older people or younger people are being hurt by the economy. Stay with us.
And we are airplanes today.
Little Marvin Gaye bringing us back. Some people like the Creedence Clearwater Revival CCR version of that. Some of you may remember the Gladys Knight and the Pips version of that. Joan, which one do you prefer? Joan Pride?
I need time to think. I'll get back to you on that.
Do you know all three of them? Do you know the Gladys Knight and the Pips version of that?
I'm a big Gladys Knight and the Pips person, so I would probably have to go for them.
Yeah, they did. They were the first, yeah. I think, and then Marvin, and then CCR. But anyway, it's a great song. Whoever does it, even when I do it, sometimes Joan, it's good. But I'll spare you that. I like telling folks about your website, though, Joan, the Kiplinger website, Kiplinger.com. Mm-hmm. Lots of good stuff there. Lots of free stuff. But if you want to go and get more than that, and of course subscribe to their publications, like the Kiplinger letter that Joan and I work off of every week, you can go to Kiplinger.com and subscribe, and they'll take your money right there on the spot and give you a 30-day free trial. And, of course, you can also subscribe to other publications like their four biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the biofuels letter. And then, of course, they've got that magazine thing.
You bet. Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
So, Joan, I bet the California letter is interesting these days. I wish I was a subscriber to the California letter.
Is that a hint?
No. Yeah. Exactly. How'd that work for me?
I'll remember that. Yeah.
But seriously, I mean, is California just going to fall off into the ocean or something?
Boy, I don't know. It's still scary.
I mean, do you have? I don't know that people across America realize what a potential. This is like the sixth largest economy in the world or something.
Yeah. It's larger than many countries.
Yeah, and I mean it is. It's in the single digits. I forgot, sixth, seventh, or eighth, or something like that.
Yeah.
Largest economy on the planet, and they're giving their employees IOUs, Joan.
Right.
What is that? It's bizarre. So I don't know what's going to happen, folks.
Yeah.
It's scary stuff going on. Joan, you guys, I like the way you reported on this age situation. Young people are being hurt more than older people with regard to unemployment, aren't they?
Well,
is that what you're saying?
Yeah, which is interesting. You would think it would be the other way around, but it's not.
You know why?
Why?
Minimum wage.
And
Joan, I predicted this. You got to admit, I predicted this. The minimum wage later this month is going to go to $7.25, Joan. And if you would rather, you know, it depends on the job. I mean, if you're hiring a social media expert, don't hire somebody who's 55 years old. Mm-hmm. Hire somebody who's 23 or 25. But you know, older people have experience. Younger people don't. I mean, I'm telling you, minimum wage increases hurt young people in the marketplace. And so I that's one of my stories that I'm sticking to, Joan. So, but you said that employment is on the rise for those who are 55 and older.
Right.
And why is that? Is it because of what I said?
Well, we say that more older workers are staying on the job, and they come back because they're bored. I also think as the years, you know, go on, the baby boomers who want to retire are going to look at their 401ks and IRAs, you know, after they took such a beating and realize they're going to have to keep working longer than they had originally intended.
They're going to outlive their money.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think this is kind of a long-term thing we're looking at here.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
And could there be a clash of the generations, Joan? We got 78 million baby boomers wandering off to pasture, and 100
million... Hey, we don't call me a wanderer. We don't wander anywhere.
And but you're the trailing edge, Joan. And so, but then we got 100 million of the millennials that are coming on. Is there going to be a clash for jobs one day, you think?
Well,
it could be
a
rumble, Joan. There could be a rumble.
Uh-oh. We can take them.
Hey, Joan, let's move over and talk about that.
Oh, yes.
Notice how... Are you happy how I said that?
I had to teach you.
Talk to us. You didn't have to teach me. Okay, so if folks, we got a problem in River City with paying for some of the things that the government wants to pay for. And, Joan, what is their proposal for that?
Well, my point here is that you're going to hear a lot about a value-added tax, or you're going to hear a lot about a consumption tax.
But don't say it fat. Don't call it VAT tax.
Right? Because that's calling it a value-added tax.
Right.
It's a value-added tax or a national sales tax. You're going to hear a lot about that because it's very tempting to members of Congress trying to figure out how to pay for just billions and billions and billions of dollars.
And they never met a tax they didn't like.
Right, of health care reform. So you're going to hear them talking about, well, just a little tiny 1% value-added tax that would raise literally hundreds of billions of dollars. But I'm here to tell you, you heard it here first, forget about it. It's not happening. And I'm not making a value judgment on the value-added tax. I'm just saying it's not political reality for it to happen.
If a VAT is proposed and about to be passed, small business owners will storm the ramparts, Joan. We will be in the streets with our sickles and hoes and axes and
well, and your supporters are going to be state and local officials who are going to say, hey, we thought that consumption taxes were our bailiwick,
right?
Not the federal government. The federal government taxes income out the wazoo. Why are you now moving into our territory
through state sales tax? Exactly,
right.
And that's exactly right, and folks.
Plus, one other thing, don't buy this business of 1% or 1.5%.
Yeah.
That's not true. That's what they call a pure tax.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be pure. It's going to exempt a whole lot of things so that it's not too regressive. So you're looking at a much higher percentage to gain the amount of revenue that they're going to want to try to get.
And, Joan, don't forget, who's going to have to collect that tax?
Small business owners will have
to collect that tax.
Right.
We have enough things to do, Joan. We don't need new things to do.
You're not just sitting around
folks,
bonbons?
If the value-added tax is a way to raise revenue, but not as long as there is also an income tax, if you're going to have VAT, you've got to abolish the 16th Amendment, which gave Congress the right to tax you on personal income. You can't have both like they do in Europe. In America, we're not going to have both. You can have one or the other, but not both. Tintail, stay with us. We'll be right back.
I can't imagine any...
Chuba, chuba, my baby. Chuba, chuba.
Hello, stranger.
This is Barbara Lewis, ladies and gentlemen. From the Wayback Machine.
It seems so good to see you back
again. I could just listen
to
that all day. What do you think, Joan?
Whatever.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen.
Why do you do this?
Secretly, she loves my classic music. She just wants to. She just loves to bust my chops so
much.
You
go ahead and believe that.
She just loves my music, but she would never let herself bring herself to believe to let anybody know that. Joan, we're talking about. We finished talking about the VAT tax.
The
VAT. See, let's call it the VAT tax. How about the VAT tax? Can I say that? VAT tax?
I'm resigning.
Value added.
Show. I've had it. I can't take it anymore.
It does, you got to admit, though, it's easy to say, though. And it's not the first thing that it's like that, where the acronym...
I'm getting dangerously close to getting on a soapbox. You better change the subject right now.
Don't worry. I'm not going to say irregardless. anyway, folks, let's move... Joan, let's move down and talk about... let's talk about some of these OSHA things. This is at the bottom of page 3. This is
something that really concerns
me. Okay. This OSHA regulations. Mm-hmm. We got Joan. Have you noticed that when President Obama and the Democrats took over our government, all we talk about is regulations? Have you noticed that?
Well, because when the Republicans were in power, all they talked about was deregulation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. There you go. You're making my point. So, Joan, OSHA.
But isn't it possible that when the Republicans were in power, isn't it possible that the pendulum swung too far the other way?
It's not possible. It's actually absolutely what happened.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But see, now you're making my point about the government's inability to solve problems because the Democrats go the other way. The Republicans don't go far enough. The Democrats go the other way. It's a political class issue, Joan. That has been my point all along. Politicians are just incompetent. I tell you, I have a very low regard for our political class in America. I can't help it because they just don't solve problems. They create problems because they think everything in America is monofaceted. I see a problem, I solve it, and therefore I address it. Therefore, it's solved. They don't realize all the tentacles that it creates, all the unintended consequences they create. Like this OSHA stuff, Joan. I want to come back to that. One of the things that OSHA is doing is they're going to get bring ergonomics back onto the table, aren't they?
Yes, and just to show you how old I am, I remember ergonomics rules being a very controversial topic during the Clinton administration.
Thank you. Tell us why.
Well, because businesses were concerned about the reach of these kinds of rules, and I think they never actually got finalized because business was very, very upset about them. And then, of course, during the Bush years, the whole thing got dropped.
Well, they brought it up at the very end of the Clinton administration, mm-hmm. And so, folks, here's how far they were going with this, though. And this is true, folks. You can go back and listen to my shows from those days, back in 99, 2000. You can go back and hear me covering these things, probably with Joan and other people. Joan, they wanted to go so far as to say, all right, occasionally during the year, you take a computer home and you work from home for Kiplinger, don't you?
Right.
All right. If those ergonomics rules passed that the Clinton administration wanted, and the same people are pretty much in charge of the new OSHA, they would say that Kiplinger would need to go to your house and make sure that your workplace in your home was ergonomically correct.
Right.
Now, that's what they were proposing. And that was the thing that was going too far, and that's what got them. That's what stopped the whole thing. Because it was preposterous. So folks, watch. This is one of the things that they're talking about. Joan, what else on ergonomics? I guess that's about it. The climate change bill, Joan, it passed the House. Is it going to pass the Senate?
Well, we're saying it's going to be real tough.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to require some changes in the bill. So I think fasten your seatbelts. You know, it's going to be a bumpy ride in the Senate.
You know how we have battleground states in the presidential elections?
Yep.
We're going to have battleground senators in the cap and trade and the health care, Joan.
Oh, good. Gosh, we could do another whole hour on that alone.
And we will, but right. Not today. But seriously, there are going to be battleground senators, and there are going to be two or three Republicans who will be in question, and there will be probably 6 to 10 Democrat senators in play. And those are the people who will make these are 8 or 10 people who will decide whether we have, whether we have cap and trade or whether we have health care reform the way the government wants it or not.
Right.
So that's look for that. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time.
Okay.
You want me to play some of that, my special music on
the
way?
No, thank you.
See you next time. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you that when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.